Hey there, Mike Dunn, Editor-in-Chief of Tabletop, and I've got something very special to tell you about. It's a new crowdfunding campaign from GUIcube. It's called The Tomb of Gygax. It's a tribute to Gary Gygax and many of the legends that created the wonderful game that we all love to play. The link is right down here. Go hit it up, back it, you can't go wrong.
Woo! This is kind of a rough week. This is a rough week.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like when it's a rough week.
Yeah, rough. Like that energy. This has been the worst week of 2024.
Correct. Cheers. I know. We were excited about what happened after 2023 with all the great games and stuff, but the layoff stuff continues to move and grow and break us and all of that. This week, I think, has been the worst even through 2023 for sure, at least in terms of reporting. So we've been hammered with news story after news story after news story of layoff after layoff after layoff and game cancellation and studios closing. It's not slowing down. It's picking up pace. So this is the downfall of the games industry at this point.
It's pretty rough because it's PlayStation, I think, had like 900 people. Then you had EA dropping 670 people. And then we were talking earlier, it's not just one. It's not just the big guys. It's the little guys, too, because you got, like, I even saw something about a studio of 19 people where they had to lay off four people. So it's like it's everywhere, it feels like right now, everywhere.
I feel like that is part of the conversation I think some are missing, that this isn't just executives being dirtbags, although that is part of it, and we should be sad about that. But this is more than that. It's hitting indie developer, completely independent people who do not have a publisher, who got their money, but they have to do layoffs as well. This is bigger than just greed. This is an actual issue of economics, and we should be sad about it because the economics are not working, and the big business aspect of video games is crunching everything together and spitting people out. But I don't think this is every studio is bad kind of thing.
Well, and it's even harder to stomach when you have a game like Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, where they talked in recent interviews about having 90% of the team come back for this. Like, it's like, this is one of the best games that's come out in the JRPG genre in a second. And part of the reason it's so good, because you had your staff there. This isn't something you can replicate with contractors and constantly bringing new people in or getting rid of people.
Yeah, well, I mean, so you said it's bigger than just companies. I mean, really, it's bigger than just games, right? I mean, our economy's not doing very good. So
the tech industry too is
and everything else. Heard that, I mean, you know, the writing's been on the wall for some time, I think, where, like, everything's kind of been ballooning up. Games have been taking longer, and a lot of the financials behind it have always been a little dubious. I mean, companies aren't super transparent with, like, how much money they're making or how sustainable things are. I mean, we're in an industry where there's a lot of fluff talk, especially for, like, investors to kind of, like, get funding and say, oh, yeah, everything's great, until it's not. And we're at the part where it's not. And so, you know, is this the end of the video?
You're even seeing it with the layoffs. These are redundant positions.
Yeah. Well, and
no, we're just making Tom over here do three jobs.
Yeah. Well, and it's complicated because I think the way games have gotten to be, I mean, there is a lot of bloat in everything. That's part of why everything takes so long is there's so many layers of bureaucracy that weren't there even 10, 15 years ago. Because there's so much oversight. I mean, you got companies are just in general just way bigger now, right? Like, you got the Microsoft empire and they have all these different things, and Sony is much bigger than it is, and there's never been more people working on games. And I think the question is, is that necessarily a good thing? And because in some ways, yes, there's, you know, technology has improved, the games are bigger than ever. And so to get the games at the scale that we have, you need a lot of people. But in general, I think things are kind of suffering too, because games are so expensive that even if they make so much money, like 10 million copies of like Spider-Man 2, I mean, that's not enough for them to actually like make real money. Which is ridiculous.
Well, that makes me like, there's so many people sharing Spider-Man 2 specifically and being like, oh, it sold this much, it sold this, how in the world are they taking people out of the studio? I'm like, because the game cost $300 million from the leaked documents that we saw. It's not like I'm upset, because yes, if there's anybody who's going to help you out of this mess, it's going to be Insomniac, because they've been one of the few companies that have been able to put out games consistently and not take forever like you've just said. But if it costs $300 million and it doesn't matter if you're selling 10 million copies, you're not making that much back, because that's probably not including a lot of other budgetary things in there either. That's might even just be just the game itself. Might not contain, maybe it contains a marketing budget, maybe it doesn't, but
yeah, and I think the question all these companies are kind of asking themselves, especially after getting results back like this, is like, does it need to be this way? And, you know, because there's, with COVID stuff, we were kind of in an era of like free money with like in terms of interest rates and the way government has been handling stuff. And it works until it doesn't. And we're at a stage where the economy is kind of taking a downturn and everyone has to tighten their belts a bit and be like, oh, we need to get like real about this stuff. No, we were expanding and expanding, and now we got to get real. And so like, is this the end of the video game industry? I don't necessarily think so, but I think it is like a restructuring and a tightening of things where things aren't going to be the same that they have been for the past decade. And I mean, we'll get into like, I guess, what solutions, what will happen, but I don't think this is the end at all. It's just potentially it's the end of really giant budgets and games that take
the end of AAA, the end of AAA. And it's mainly
as we know it anyway.
AAA is not really sustainable as we know it. Like it just isn't. You can't take, like, I mean, just look at Suicide Squad. That's just took too long to come out. It's not just taking too long to come out, it's the industry trends and how they change. When you take that long to make a video game, your game is dated by the time. I mean, Suicide Squad's obviously dated because it chose the live service format, which died a couple of years ago. Yeah. So, but it's just this thing of you take so long building this concept, that concept might not even people even care about that concept down the line. Some things are going to be true to form. People like playing the single player action games. That's why Sony continues to make them. They're good, but it's a real risk to take more than 4 years building a game right now, especially at an inflated budget, because that's part of what inflates the budget is how long it takes to build some of these games.
Yeah. And that entire time, it's pure risk too, right? You don't get any money back until you actually release it. And so that made more sense when it was like 2 year projects and then you get like your return right away and you can take that money and like fund the sequel.
And it didn't cost nearly as much.
Yeah.
Like, and even you look at something like Ghost of Tsushima, it cost $60 million, I think, but that was a passion project. It was well done, but it only took 4 years. Like, and it was that pricey. That's cheap in today's standards. Yeah.
And everything is now it's like a forever project. Like, even if you release it, I mean, they're like, we need to support it for years and years, and we've got a budget for that. Like, you know, the Last of Us thing that got canceled a little while back, that didn't get canceled because of the game itself necessarily, because they looked at the costs of how much it would take to support it as a service game. And they're like, nope, this isn't worth it. We're just going to can the whole thing, which is ridiculous. But that's how these companies are thinking right now.
I mean, some of it is literally cutting the fat. Like, this game isn't going to work. And unfortunately, like, for instance, you talk about, what was the name? London Studio. I hate that we lost London Studio from PlayStation. They were a fun studio, but if you look at what they've made, they made a game called Erica, which was an FMV game that was like essentially real life cutscenes that you were guiding Erica through, and it was like at best $20 when it came out. And then before that, they made PlayStation VR experiences, like, and they were working on, I think, a some sort of fantasy game in London that was a live service co-op game, and it's like, it probably just didn't work. It probably they probably looked at it and was like, this is just, like you said, not worth the cost of putting money into it, because we don't know that anything's going to happen. And then just throw out the extra of, hey, it's just, we might as well cut bait rather than keep spending money, considering they haven't done anything that's made us a lot of money, because I doubt most of the stuff on that list made a lot of money. I mean, they were like iToy and VR and stuff. So I think the most sinister thing out of all of it is that 5 days before their studio closed, Jim Ryan was there and they were telling him goodbye, and there are pictures.
And yeah, he's the angel of death. Yeah.
Yeah. He probably knew in that building as they were giving him farewells, fond farewells, until I get the feeling they weren't feeling the same about him 5 days later.
But no, I'm sure
it sucks. But it's the you look at it and you go, I get it, but man, this sucks. Like, that's really what you have to be at in this.
In some instances, yes, I get it. But I just don't know where, I guess, AAA games goes from here. Because if you cut back on scale to reduce costs of development and develop faster so you can potentially get a greater return, that greater return may not be there, because people look at games as they are now and think, well, if you cut back on that, like, what am I paying $70 for, right? You jump the price and then you're going to cut back on the content that's typically in games. You're not going to put all this, what we would consider a lot of bloat and side quests and open world stuff, and you're going to replace all that and not and charge us $70? What? Why would you? So yep. You can't do that. You can't continue on the path you're going. So where do you go?
Like, you go the Yakuza route. You go the Yakuza route, because those guys over, what is it, Ryugato, or I can't remember what.
Yeah, Ryugagatoku. Yeah, I mean,
They know what they're doing, because they're recycling a lot of assets and making fantastic video games out of them, and still charging you $70, and you're happy to fork it over. Japanese game development, I think, is probably far ahead right now of Western game development. I think Western game development has let a little bit of that Hollywood budget ideas sink in, where everything has to be expensive, and you sink all this money in, and what happens? Everything goes kaput when it's not done right.
Yeah, well, the Hollywood,
what the audience wants.
Well,
you know,
the audience wants a good game, though. Like, of course, if it's good, because we're seeing that with like games, movies like Indiana Jones come out that flop, and they sunk hundreds of millions of dollars into it.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, like, you can make a great product without spending too much on it. Like, it's proven that you can.
Of course. Yeah. But in the same way there's Yakuza, you also have, on the other spectrum, Call of Duty, which year in, year out, could be up, could be mildly down, could be really down, and people still buy it. So we get consistency, but there are some studios that don't have the benefit of consistency. Yeah.
Well, when you're so established like Call of Duty is, and you have the monetization that they have, it makes it easier.
Of course, but Yakuza has the same benefit. They don't put out as many games as Call of Duty, but their audience is hungry for Yakuza games. So when they come, the audience is there. They eat it up. You might be able to get away with that if Insomniac tried to do that with Spider-Man. I mean, number one, that's a licensed IP. That's going to be expensive no matter what. Every single time you make a licensed game, it's going to be expensive.
Well, that's where something like Miles Morales works. You're doing that's again what they should be doing to lower the budget.
Can Insomniac sustain that game after game? Will the audience be hungry for something bigger after a while? We're paying $70. Give us something big. I don't know if they can. I don't know if a studio like Insomniac could get away with that. You see what I'm saying? Like, I feel like it is studio to studio where a strategy like that could work, like what you're talking about. Because I do agree. Like, that sounds like the way forward. But I'm also not sure every studio, particularly AAA studios, could actually get away with that.
Yeah.
Well, I think part of it too is, you know, you asked like where AAA games will go. I mean, I think part of it is they're probably going to go away. I think you touched on, Anthony, exactly what I think is going to happen is that you're going to start seeing games start catering more to their established audiences and working within that scope and being a bit more realistic that you're not going to get every single millions of people ever with every single release you do. And so you're going to start scoping your company appropriately to that rather than trying to expand to the widest possible audience.
When you're already seeing that, like EA even said, we're focusing on our IP, like what we have.
Right. And because, you know, it's nice to get everyone as much as people as you can, but at a certain point, I think things have scoped up where, like, even if you're getting everyone, it's not necessarily worth the cost. And I think part of it is we're going to see games just kind of, because one thing I've been thinking in general, like, games have been kind of like the rising star in how everything, you know, all the money, like, it's like the most profitable thing. It's more profitable than movies and all that kind of stuff. And I kind of wonder if the days of that are numbered and people are going to eventually start moving into the next big thing. I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but I think you're right. I think video
4D.
Yeah. 4D. Yeah. And so like video games as a whole, there might just be start being less and less money going into them and people are going to start chasing the next big thing, whatever that happens to be. And it's not, you know, video games aren't going to go away, but I think there's going to be a more, they're going to get ever so slightly more niche as time goes on. Like, I think we might have reached a peak of how popular video games are.
2023's releases may be, the absolute height.
Right. And so
just amount, sheer amount. I'm just getting sheer amount. Like,
I think sheer money spent.
Go ahead, Noah.
I don't think AAA is going anywhere. I think you're just now going to see studios be smarter with their budgets and their money and more cheap with the way that they invest. Because you can make great AAA open world, you know, all of these 100-hour games, but you can also do it without, you know, $300 million. You know, it's, I think they're just going to be more smart about their budgets. I don't think anything crazy is going to change. We're probably not going to have as many like new random things, but I think the AAA is not going anywhere.
It depends on how you define AAA, right? Because you're saying they're going to make cheaper games essentially. And so I think that's going to be the change, right? The AAA that we know today is not going to be the same as the AAA 5, maybe 10 years from now. That's the direction I think things are going. So there's going to be expensive games. There will be a Spider-Man 3.
How would the games be different, though? How are they going to be different?
I think a lot of the accessibility stuff is probably going to go away. I think that's a huge money sink that's going to go away. I think, in general, they're probably going to be less focus on the graphical fidelity. I think that's going to be a big thing. The motion capture, all that kind of stuff. I think a lot of stuff that, and then I think there's going to be just in general, I think there's going to be a lot more, like there'll be a Spider-Man, but it's not going to be the scope in the same way. It's not going to be scoped the same way as Spider-Man 2 was.
It's going to be, what can I reuse?
It's going to be a lot of reusing, a lot of smarter stuff in terms of reuse and in terms of how we're spending the money. And it's not going to be the same grand scope. I mean, in general, like, I mean, you know, games, Sony will continue to release games. I just don't think it's going to be exactly the same thing. They're not going to be spending the same money in the same places. And they don't need to. And I guess part of it, too, is we're kind of approaching this budget talk in good faith. Like, they're really spending the money on all this stuff to make games better. I don't know if that's necessarily true. I mean, there's money laundering schemes in Hollywood all the time about how they're spending their budget, like the Adam Sandler movies. They're not spending millions and millions of dollars making Adam Sandler movies. So, you know, and you kind of wonder if the same thing happens a little bit in the game industry here too, because there's the Hollywood comparison, I think, is apt in some ways. But but you know, if you're not an industry that attracts people who launder money, you also kind of lose out in some ways too, where the you lose some of the money flow, because the people who launder money attract people who invest in
equity.
That kind of stuff. It's a chicken and an egg situation where the money brings money.
The promise of money brings money.
Right, right. And I mean, that's kind of how the whole investment in tech industry works too. But I don't know. I mean, there's still going to be a Spider-Man 3. So I think you're right in that sense. No, I think just what we understand as AAA games, what the AAA companies value in terms of like their giant encroaching feature sets and fidelity and all that kind of stuff, is going to take a backseat.
Yeah, I think it might be a good way, a good thing for some games. I know, let's talk Battlefield, for example. You know, this is one of my favorite franchises, and that suffered from trying to make that game something that it not, and it never was, and it never should be. But if we're looking at, okay, the idea that developers are going to start making the games for the audiences to appeal to those audiences, so they feel like that $70 is worth it, then you might see Battlefield come back the way it should, because that's what the audience wants. They're going to buy that for sure. If we give them this thing, they're going to buy it. And then the next year, David, we go into David's idea of reusing the assets and things like that. So, you know, what can we do to change things up for the next Battlefield? But we got to reuse some things in order to...
Modern Warfare 3 is more or less an expansion.
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, that's a great example.
Reuse City. I mean, but... Yeah. Making a good amount of money for them, and I'll be honest, they didn't do half bad with this one in terms of the gameplay. There's still
the game
same SPMM and stuff, that kind of stuff that's issues, but it's still what they've done overall to make it fun is keeping people putting money into it. Can it's probably making them a decent coin considering how little extra, I mean, there was effort, but you get what I'm saying, wasn't as much with the reuse.
Do we start seeing something like that where it's like Battlefield, you know, whatever, Battlefield 7, but you know, it's like this like strange middle ground between like 7 and 8, you know, where it's like,
which I'm sure you'll be sad to know, Battlefield, the narrative studio, closed. Ridgeline, they closed that Battlefield studio.
I mean, I didn't play a bunch of the narrative part of Battlefield in the first place.
Apparently the story is moving to Criterion. So
okay, maybe new set of brains. Maybe they could do something fun with it. But either, my point is, I just use Battlefield as
Criterion needs to come bring back Burnout. That'll save the industry.
I agree. But yeah, you know, 2042 was a terrible.
See, now I can lead EA.
Yeah, there you go. Another studio.
I'll bring back Burnout.
Need your leadership. Right. And then Modern Warfare 3 is probably the most overt example of what we're talking about, although I'm not sure it would be the best version of that, but that could be the future.
Yep.
Don't know.
It's just interesting just seeing, we're watching a lot of this kind of stuff unfold before our very eyes, things that just you're not always present with in that time frame. Like, we weren't present. I don't believe any of us were present during the video game crash back in, you know, when Atari made too many consoles and video games.
thinking it would be a huge deal.
And this is very different. This is very different.
Yeah, I was born 3 years after, so it would have taken me a few more years to be present for that. But I don't think anything's going to crash. I agree with Noah. No. I don't think AAA is going to go away. I also don't think it will turn more double A, but I do think we might see the rise of double A because of this. So there was a time where double A was huge. You know, you get your big triple A.
PS2 era, man, that was ridiculous.
Yeah. But even, you know, PlayStation N64 era, lots of double A. And it's kind of weird how that era worked, because double A almost felt triple A in some cases.
Man, remember how many different football games were available? Like back before Madden got the rights to everything, like back in PS2, like there was 909 and there was Blitz and there was, you know, the
Breit.
Yeah, I mean, Peyton Manning had that exclusive one on the Xbox that was out there. Like,
we can talk about all, you know, the quality, but yes, the variety was
there. It wasn't always quality, but yeah, there was a lot there to choose from. And I mean, maybe that's the good thing, is people will be able to get out there and just straight up create, like in these instances, hopefully.
I actually have a thought. Like, what? Because this is also hitting indie developers. Like, what happens with them? Because indie games are getting more expensive. Like, they're, you know, $20, $30 off from a AAA game sometimes. And people, you know, rightfully so or not, don't want to pay that much for an indie game. And, of course,
indie games. Not to be a meanie head here, but I feel like the indie scene is like exploded a lot harder too, and it's made it harder to make your way into the.
There's a very small percentage of indie games that actually make money.
Like in the sense of especially like back from the days of like Xbox Live Arcade and stuff, like in the indie scene was still very new in kind of who was getting in there and stuff. So it's become so easy, and like we were talking about, there's so many people that jumped in thinking, okay, this is where the money is, this is where we're making money. And it's just, unfortunately, it's just like live service, there's not enough money to go around.
Do you think we'll see a rise, like on the indie scene or at the indie level of the industry, do you think we'll see a rise in like crowdfunding or early access to get funding into it?
Economy's bad. No one's going to give money out.
I
mean, it's helping tabletop by doing it that way. There's a ton of tabletops get funded by crowd.
But tabletop has not been nearly as big as video games has gotten. Like, their growth is rising.
I'm not saying like it'll take over, but do you think we'll see a rise?
I think the physical aspect of tabletop helps it too. But I can see there being more people trying Kickstarter, whether or not it actually helps.
Video games are kind of weird because they already kind of had their honeymoon period with Kickstarter.
Yes.
And there's enough high profile things where I think people are very wary these days, and that probably won't go away.
Star Citizen.
people have not forgotten Mighty Number 9. I have minorally different opinions about it.
Mighty Number 9 is good, but the project and the way they handled it left a sour taste in a lot of people's mouth.
Agreed. Yes. I understand some of the decisions, but agreed. Yes, it did leave a sour taste in people's mouths. So I think that's the difference with Kickstarter. Tabletop, they're going to see their version of Mighty Number 9 soon enough, and they're going to have their sour taste of that.
Well, and you said, since it is on a smaller scale, it doesn't affect as many people, so the taste doesn't go as far.
No, but tabletop uses Kickstarter a lot to actually advertise their game. So one bad sour taste, that's a big enough profile game, will completely change that, and then the industry is going to change in terms of how they're going to advertise. You got to be more careful, all that kind of stuff. So tabletop is growing in its popularity outside of just the tabletop community, where more people are becoming a part of it, especially with the explosion of D&D on Twitch and, you know, like just D&D in general, across the internet. They are reaching a level where it's like, oh, I remember when video games was at this stage. Oh, this is cute. Like it's there where it's like, ooh, it feels good. There's more people coming in. There's lots of cool board games coming out. But they'll reach that point.
So here's a fun thing. Has the rise of Twitch and video streamers, all this kind of stuff, has that hurt video games? Because yes, it's more exposure, but how much of it is people not actually playing a game, but instead watching someone play a game and then giving them money?
Has Twitch hurt society in general? I think the answer would be yes.
Noah's over there like, I'm going to be streaming on Twitch later. Stop.
Yeah, I was like, guys, please no. Yeah. No, I think that's very interesting. I do think there is a group of people that not purchase a select number of games. Like, they might pick out, be like, okay. And it could be budgetary constraints too, where it's like, hey, I can't pick up this one, so I'll watch, you know, Rad Brad go through it on YouTube or something like that, you know. But I don't think it's a significant enough number. I think there still is. Agreed. But I think that's a really cool or an interesting thing to think about is how many, you know, copies of games haven't been sold because of, you know, YouTube and social networking, you know, the rise of streaming and all this stuff.
I wonder if in the future publishers will start relying even more on Twitch streamers and quote unquote influencers to cut costs. So in marketing. So
they already are to a degree.
Of course, they're already using them, but relying on them even more. So
I definitely think it impacts, or like it influences a lot more people than what we think, where they're like, hey, this game looks kind of interesting. Let me just go watch somebody stream it, you know, their favorite streamer. And that way they can judge, almost kind of like seeing a review of it.
Well, it's a combination of that. And then some of these people, it's like, to them, it's like they're experiencing playing the game through that other person.
Yeah, so, same as sports. Same as sports.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's actually something I think about a lot too. Like when I write reviews, I mean, it's never been easier for someone just to form their own opinion by going on YouTube and Twitch and all that kind of stuff. And so, like when I write stuff, it's like I gotta say something that's only from my perspective. You can't just get that like by looking at it, right?
that's the Jack exclusive,
right? It's not the '90s where you just read a game magazine. You're doing like a hidden. We're finding out about something from the first time. It's so easy to get your own information now. And I think, I think Noah's right in that. I think this stuff it's important too. Cause I'm of the opinion, really, as long as you get the word out, it doesn't really matter how, like, as long as people are, it doesn't, you know, I think in a way, awareness is pretty much always exclusively good. Like I kind of feel the same way about like piracy and stuff. Like I don't really buy it when a company says, oh, we lost $1 billion because, you know, pirates took Zelda or whatever, right? I don't buy that, because I think the vast majority of people who would watch a stream over playing a game or would pirate a game over buying it, I think it's
negligible. They weren't going to buy it anyway.
Yes, they weren't going to buy it. And it's actually more likely that they had such a good experience with the stream or playing it that they might have some goodwill and buy something from that company down the line. I think that's the more likely scenario in pretty much every case.
Yeah, but in terms of it bringing down the industry, I don't think it. I agree with that.
I don't really care about finances in general. I don't really care about business stuff. I think there's some long-term effects though on just how the way people view and talk about games that I do think is kind of harmful. I mean, you know, back in the '90s, back in the 2000s, there was kind of a prestige and a mystique to playing games where people were more willing to like connect and share experiences over these kinds of things, where like actually playing the game mattered. And I think people had a deeper understanding, a deeper appreciation of that versus watching the streamer kind of blow through over their commentary and that kind of stuff. And it's not a big deal, but it fundamentally affects how people think about a game, like versus I actually had to play it and this is like formed a personal connection with me versus, you know, Brad 89 kind of like making like penis jokes over it like 24/7, you know. It's
whoa, bing bong 420, thank you for the 5 gifted,
right? Or that. It's like it's a different experience, and I think it kind of taints how people view games sometimes. Where I think we're in an era where games in general, people kind of view them as very disposable, and this Twitch streaming stuff doesn't really help.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack with that, but
yeah.
We are rabbit trailing tonight, boys. This is fun.
Oh yeah, yeah. I was like, do I want to go down that rabbit trail? I don't know, but
if I didn't have Rebirth sitting on my PS5 waiting for me to play it after the podcast, I would go down that rabbit hole. But
that's a fair
point. Maybe once I beat Rebirth.
No, it was just an interesting thought. Just how Twitch has affected gamers.
Yeah, no, I just don't think it has had an outsized detriment to the.
We know it encourages some games to like be purchased. Obviously,
absolutely.
Like,
I think it encourages more to be purchased than to not be.
Yeah,
I would agree. I would agree with that. I think more people who are interested in a game and they watch it on Twitch are actually just interested in the game more than uninterested. It's only those games where the thought is already negative towards it, like a Suicide Squad. People are just watching it because they want to see how much it sucks if it or whatever, you know.
Yep.
I think it depends on the type of game too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it's single player game, that might be, you know, less, they'll just watch the playthrough, but like, you know, the online games, I mean, I'm curious how many copies of Helldiver 2 got purchased because they saw streamers.
Oh, it was definitely a word of mouth. That's a word of mouth game if I've ever seen one.
So
I mean, Among Us I think is the best example of game that benefited from
absolutely random.
Yeah.
Like
two
what
years after it launched,
thing.
It explodes and wins an award. So, like, you know, that I feel like that kind of influence on a game is rarer than the average game that comes out and is streamed on.
I mean, it's
on Twitch.
There are still 345,000 people playing Helldivers right now, like literally right now.
How many people are playing Redfall though?
That is one of those negative games.
On that note, it's been fun, boys. I'm happy to be back. I'm going to go play.
There are 15 people.
GGs.
All right. Going strong.
It went down. It went down. On some good news, on the other side of the layoffs, Toys for Bob has gone independent. Saber Interactive has released itself from the clutches, or whatever you want to call
the
it,
embrace.
Of Embracer. Yes, the embrace of Embracer.
He came up with that at like 2 p.m. today and was like, I'm going to save this.
He probably did. And then Gearbox apparently has a solution to getting out of Embracer. They just haven't announced it yet. So, it's great Toys for Bob got out. I don't know what they're going to work on, but
I think what's crazier is that they got out. Like, I really want to know how. Like,
yeah, why
this
is that
doesn't
crazy
happen
to you?
All the time? Well, because you often have, you know, there's the studios that get purchased, and you think in your head, okay, this is like they're theirs now. Like, it's not the thought of. Like with Bungie, they worked with Microsoft when they left. They weren't owned by Microsoft. It was just the IP and everything like that. And
yeah, but then, they also happened to get from under Activision under contract. Yeah.
Well, that was an entirely different thing where Activision was like, screw this. We don't want Destiny 2 anymore. So that
however,
was just
y'all gotta go,
storm.
Go.
But you don't often see a studio that's straight up just we own them that just gets out of whatever their, you know, being a studio is. Like you sometimes see, okay, everybody left this studio and created, like everybody left Infinity Ward and now we've got Respawn. Like you see that, but this is straight up Toys for Bob. Just like, hi, peace. We independent.
I just
now.
I picture that the execs were like, you know, in a meeting or whatever, and they get a call and they're like, hey, Bob's wanting to leave. Is that cool? He's like, oh yeah, Bob can go. Sure, I don't care. He can quit. I don't care. And they're like, okay, cool, thanks.
Is there
actually
a Bob that works there? Is that like Bob? Is he the head of the Toys for Bob?
That would be so good. And they bring him. They have to bring him every like toy. Like,
yeah,
that's literally the entire thing of it. He comes up with the idea and it's like, here, this is a toy you can make for me.
Here you go, Bobbert.
I'm just so happy. For
I mean, the only thing I can guess is there has to be something contractual where they have the right to do it from the acquisition. Like, that's the only thing in my mind that like kind of pieces that together, that's how.
There's like a technicality in there somewhere.
There's a technicality that they've been able to use, because we don't see anything along the lines of a transaction or anything. Like with Saber, there's an actual like numbers and stuff like that of a payout, like that they're using to get out. We don't see that with Toys for Bob. I mean, did Microsoft just say, hey, you can leave? Like, that seems kind of odd, but
it makes me have the thought, because obviously Microsoft hasn't owned like a bunch of studios up until, you know, the last 7 years or so, but I don't, and correct me if I'm wrong, I just don't remember them closing a lot of studios either. Like, I feel like the studios that they've had, they still kind of have, and the studios that they spun up or bought, they still kind of have.
You're talking about Microsoft?
Yeah. I don't remember. I'm not saying they haven't. I just don't remember the last time they've shut down a studio.
It's been a second, because they were buying everybody. I mean, they did Lionhead is probably the most recent. If I'm
Lionhead,
remembering right,
okay, yeah.
Lionhead,
yeah,
was the most recent. I'm getting there. Just trying to see if I could find.
My point with that is, if they haven't shut down a bunch of studios, then maybe that's just not their thing. Maybe they just release studios more often than closing them. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because again, I just don't remember the last time Lionhead was one of them.
Yeah, they Microsoft released Studios Japan, Microsoft Studios Victoria, Lionhead, like we mentioned, Ensemble was closed,
okay, yeah,
Halo
Ensemble,
Wars guys,
right.
Aces, who did Flight Simulator before, Big Park was consolidated. They did Kinect stuff, Digital Anvil.
That makes sense.
Yeah, just Hired Gun, there's Team Dakota, there's a bunch of different ones. Microsoft has done a decent amount of it, but Lionhead was the biggest one.
Yeah, so among the big studios that we know, they really haven't like closed them down. Besides,
yeah, not
Lionhead.
Recent stuff. Yeah,
yeah. So that could be because they just haven't owned a bunch of studios up until now. So in the future, maybe they do start shutting more studios down. But again, they let Bungie go. They just let them go, and now they've let Toys for Bob go. So,
Toys for Bob was just more odd because of the fact of like Bungie wasn't owned. Like, that was, I guess, the difference. Like, Bungie was just like, weren't they just part of, did they actually have them, like, did they own Bungie?
I don't think they owned Bungie.
I don't think they ever did.
That's where I'm trying to know for sure, because they may have actually. Let me look here. I'm trying to look it up. Like,
I don't think that was the whole reason. Is like, you know, like that's why they did.
Actually, in
that.
2000, they acquired Bungie. They did.
Okay. Yeah.
But there was a buyout. It looks like, so that is the difference. Is there was a buyout that wasn't announced.
Oh, they bought themselves out. Okay.
Yeah. So that's where Toys for Bob is a little different, in that we haven't really seen anything of that. Kind of origin. I guess
that is unique. Yeah, that is cool. That's good for them.
I wonder if some of the other thing was maybe they were. I hate to think it. Maybe Microsoft was about to close the studio full on, and they were like, "Hey, instead of closing us, can we have the name and leave?" Like,
yeah. Well,
that's a possibility.
I don't think that's too far off. I think
just let these people go. Just don't let all of us go. It's like you can take the blame, because we do need to cut costs, but
yeah,
we can spin off after you cut these people.
Toys R Us, they were just supporting. They were just a support studio, right?
Well, they did crash like that. They actually,
I mean, after that
Team Rumble, I'm pretty sure they did Team
yeah,
Rumble.
Yeah, after they became a Call of Duty support studio,
They were helping.
Support studio.
Yeah, but
okay,
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they also at least part of the studio did Crash Team Rumble as well.
Yeah. I think part of what this is I don't think Microsoft has a strong interest in owning Toys for Bob or a lot of the studios they have. I mean, their management style has always kind of historically been hands off.
I was told the second they bought Toys for Bob, we were getting new Spyro, Crash, and Banjo Kazooie games.
Yeah, no, those are,
it's
those
a
are
lie.
Next week.
It's
yeah,
a lie.
Next week.
But Toys for Bob is still going to make games for Microsoft, apparently. So I guess that
possibly
is not
they're
completely
pitching,
out of the question.
They're at least pitching
yeah.
something.
Yeah, and so I think part of the deal is they're hands off with their studios. They don't really have any interest in spending the money to like actually manage and like, you know, oversee these studios. That's not, they don't want to do that. They've historically been hands off on that. I think that kind of explains their general game slate and too, but
you can do that and still own the studios though. Like you don't have to be we'll just get rid of them.
Well, now they don't have to pay health insurance and benefits.
Yes.
So.
Now they don't have to do any of the like, They cut a lot of the expenses and say, you guys can do your own thing and we can just contract you out for stuff that we want. And so it's,
which
that
is
way,
very Toys, par for the course for Microsoft.
Right. It's Toys for Bob gets some independence. Microsoft gets to avoid paying health insurance and all that kind of stuff. And everyone's a bit more flexible, which I think that's kind of the future of how these big companies will operate in a sense. I think they're going to let a lot of the smaller parts kind of spin off and do their own thing. And let them be a little bit leaner so they don't have to necessarily deal with all the bureaucracy and with all the expenses of being part of a big corporation. And they might get faster results, might get faster games out. I mean, so like one of the things that
the only thing that you get in the sense of like the worry of it is what if they get a nice contract with somebody else? Like that's the
well,
only worry that you have to have in those is you're risking losing that workforce. That's
right.
That's
but if Microsoft's not interested in like, and you know, if Microsoft's not interested in the console wars or exclusives or really selling hardware, I mean, what's the risk at all, right? I mean, they're basically software partners, and I mean, I think the closest thing is probably what Microsoft did with that like Battletoads game, which you know, I mean, it's arguably not a real game, but did you finish it? Should we talk about Battletoads?
No, not right this moment.
Okay, because that's a fake game. But,
they did release the new Battletoads. I don't know if it was Xbox, but
yeah, they did release the new Battletoads, and there's two levels that are Battletoads, and the rest of the game is like prototype iPhone mini games they stitched together for like the entire rest of the run. It's like it's not a real game. It's like a fake prototype game.
Okay. That was done by Dalala, by the way. That was not Toys for Bob. So.
Right. But it's a similar situation. Yeah, they contracted out this different company to make their game for them. And they did get it out and they got it out in, you know, whatever shape it's in is arguable, but they got it out. And I think I don't think Microsoft was reeling too bad from that, even if it was a piece of crap. And I can see them using that arrangement for Toys of Bob for Bob is what I was getting at essentially.
It probably depends on the studio, which one, you know, a studio like Toys for Bob, they're kind of like, yeah, we can let them go. They are a Call of Duty support studio. So if they want to get back into making games, then they're probably going to have to just split off and we let them do that. And we get the benefit of whatever games that they decide to make, potentially. Because if they stayed with Microsoft, I imagine they would still be a Call of Duty support studio. So I think there's a factor there with it as well.
I feel like, well, I mean, this is more my own personal thing, but like if you follow what they do, I think they were working on Spyro 4, and they might still be working on Spyro 4, and maybe that's part of what they're trying to finish up with Microsoft, or maybe they're outsourcing it. Because there was a thing I saw where like Microsoft, or at least the Activision part of Microsoft now, is like moving a lot of jobs out to Canada, which is where Toys for Bob and Beenox is. And those are like two of Microsoft's, or at least Activision's like biggest studios. And so there's kind of a conglomerate of Canadian talent that I think they try to use interchangeably as support studios for each other. And so I feel like there is a Spyro 4 somewhere, I don't know if it's like getting canceled for because Toys for Bob is leaving, or if it's being handed over to Beanox, because there's a lot of weird crossover where they support each other, because I think it worked that way for the Crash game too. And so, you know, I think there was at some point a Spyro 4, and so it wasn't just Call of Duty, but I don't know. Who knows where it's at?
I mean, maybe they have people working on it, a small group of people working on Spyro 4, because I agree. I do think they were working on it. I don't know if that completely paused or they just had a small group working on it, but they became a Call of Duty support studio. That was their thing. So it's good news though. And then we have Embracer Group and or not Embracer, Saber Interactive and Gearbox getting away from Embracer Group. And David, do you think, you know, whatever is happening with Toys for Bob, Saber, and potentially Gearbox, like this is what studios need to do going forward, if possible, is what you're thinking? Yes.
Yep. I mean, obviously it's rough out there. We already heard from like GDC, there's not as much money going around, but if you have the opportunity to get out now, otherwise you're risking your entire studio just being completely just canned. We always talked about the conglomeration of, I'm probably using the wrong word, but of the industry,
consolidation
of the industry was not a good thing, and it grew too fast. People got all these false positives from, you know, COVID, where everybody was, it was literally the perfect situation where every single person was stuck at home and had to buy their games digitally, which gave more money to the more of a cut to the main to the console makers, and all they could do was play the game, so they all did all these crazy engagement numbers. Of course your stats are going to look great because everybody was stuck at home, and then everybody eventually had to go back to normal life and do their jobs and stuff and whatnot, and suddenly all these numbers have fallen and they're like, oh crap, we hired too many people too fast because things looked so great last year. Well, duh. Like, I'm looking at right now, I'm looking at one of our most profitable months in my job, and straight up looking, I'm like, look, we can't expect this. We can't, like, we like to add like a percentage to our goals for the next months and stuff like that. And I'm like, there's no way. I'm like, I'd like to be wrong. Like, but even our current numbers, as good as they are, will not match this. Like, it was just an obscene amount. And I think the problem is everybody looked at the false positives. They overgrew and started grabbing all these people. And these people were doing pretty well where they were. They were just a valuable commodity. So they took the payout. Like, if you have a chance to take some of that payout, some of that extra money you just got, put yourself right back in the same position you already were. Yeah, it's a little more expensive out there, but take some of that money and put yourself back in that position and still have some money in the bank. You know, if you have that ability, you should do it, because like we just talked about, content is not becoming something that's not necessary. So you have the opportunity to contract some stuff out, like Toys for Bob. It's not like they're going out on the street. They already have the ability to pitch stuff to Microsoft to say, hey, that IP, we did a really good job with it when we were here. You should think about bringing us back in to do it, even if we're doing it outside of your company specifically. Same thing with like Saber. Saber's doing some fantastic work, some great jobs, or some great games that have come out here recently. Embracer is about to fall apart, so it's better for you to get out while the getting's good before Embracer falls apart and you go down with them. They were, Jason Schreier in one of his reports said that KOTOR is still technically alive at Saber.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
It's
yeah,
still technically alive at Saber. What's funny is there's probably still a very low chance of this game coming out, but that chance actually went up when they left Embracer, because because of the fact of there's probably a better chance of this game happening because Saber is not stuck under Embracer. So it's just that thing of if you have the ability to support yourself outside right now we're about to be at a time where all of these big first party labels are canceling games left and right. They're closing studios and they're canceling games. Guess what's about to not be on the market? Video games. So what do you have the opportunity to do? Fill in every gap and put other video games out there. If you have the ability to get out and the ability to make good games, you probably should do that because you're going to be the fill-ins, the triple A's, or the double A's, those really good games. Not to mention who knows what kind of deal you might get, because Stellar Blade, the reason it took us a while to see that game again is because Sony invested extra money into it to make it an exclusive, as well as to send some designers over there to give them some pointers. Imagine if you're already a great designer on the market, you're going to be looked at by some of these companies, like especially Sony right now. Sony's reeling. Sony won't have a first party game this year. Imagine if you're in a good spot to be like, hey, guess what? We have really good game that other people are going to want. Why don't you throw a bag at us and get some exclusivity over here? Like, just it's a market that we're about to get less and less from. So if you can create something that there's a demand for, it's a good time to do it if you're able. And that is part of the solution, because a lot of these teams are going to be making smaller games that are not as expensive.
Well, I was wondering, in the case of like Saber, where they're independent now, but they probably don't have the money to finish KOTOR. Probably a publisher out there who would love to have their name associated with KOTOR.
Yep. Heck, so, Sony may come back.
Well, Sony already had their name associated. It could be Microsoft, it could be EA, it could be, you know.
Well, I guess we need to know what happened, because it was exclusive to PlayStation. The remake was originally.
Oh, it was? Okay.
Yeah. Well,
I didn't know that.
I just don't know specifically, but you're very right in what you're saying. Like, you have valuable commodities that the market is going to want.
So my point with bringing that up is, I wonder if that is also how developers shift to where, and maybe this goes for indies too, to where they have this, they just try to have this dope pitch, really, and you know, if they don't have the funds to support their studio, instead of doing layoffs, just have a awesome pitch potentially and try to get a publisher's attention who would publish it. It would have to be, it would probably, not even probably, it would have to be a known entity, something that is probably guaranteed to get a return.
Yeah.
But I just wonder if that's how these developers start shifting as they gain their independence. And if more developers do gain their independence from publishers like Embracer, if that's the direction that they go, they don't tie themselves down with a publisher forever. They just keep on pitching their ideas. Granted, that would be hell. It's not easy to do that.
Well, but we get back to that. Back in the time when you did support work to pay for the bills until
that's always how it's been for smaller studios, is they always do contract work, whether they're credited for it or not. That's how they pay the bills, to do big projects.
Because you're not getting to build your own big thing, but you're like I forget, I did a GameStop TV segment specifically on one of the studios and how they supported on BioShock and on a Half-Life, I think it was Arcane actually, that they supported on like BioShock and Call of Duty and did some other support work on like a Half-Life game that never ever came out. So it's like just ways to pay the bills until they got their big breaks.
Yeah. I just wonder if there's going to be even more of that.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of that, you kind of look at it and it's the market kind of resetting itself to a degree. in that instance.
I think so. There's going to be a lot of smaller and nimble studios.
We're going to have Double A coming back.
I think there's going to be a lot of smaller and nimble studios doing support on a lot of different things, and
they're going to be support contract, and then
everything's been consolidated for the past 6-7 years, and now I think we're going to see things start to decentralize a little bit.
That's where I think it's going to go. Yes.
Yep. Market correcting itself.
Stabilizing.
More like, yeah. More like the business is correcting itself, because the market seems to want what they want as far as consumers are concerned. But
I just love how people forget how expensive some of these video games used to be.
They
like,
don't
those
forget.
Cartridges,
they don't
man.
Know. They don't know.
Back in the day with the $100 64 cartridges, seeing some of those ads.
Yeah.
Doom was like $100.
I remember Doom walking 64. Into Toys R Us and Mario 3 was $80. Yep.
People forget, man. Pepperidge Farm remembers, though.
What? I don't get that
it's
reference.
It's a stupid family.
You don't know about Pepperidge Farm?
From a long time.
No, I don't.
I'll have to share that with you sometime.
Yeah, it's like, I feel like I am Captain America, where I'm like, I get that reference. Yep. I get it.
I didn't watch Family Guy. I didn't watch any of that.
That was a very long time.
Pepperidge Farms
ago,
is like a brand of like.
Well, I know what Pepperidge Farms
well, that
is.
Used to be, that used to be a part of like. I mean, that was
well,
straight
that's like
up
a,
there.
It's a commercial that Family Guy referenced. That's the joke, Anthony. There's a Pepperidge Farm commercial where they said Pepperidge Farm remembers, and then Family Guy referenced that.
Yeah, I don't remember that commercial. Do not remember that commercial. I know Pepperidge Farms. I did not remember that commercial. Okay, well, I didn't expect this conversation to take an hour, but
Wheel of Questions to end it out. Wheel of Questions.
Oh yes, the Wheel of Questions.
Also, since I had to show that I did in fact buy Pentiment.
He bought Pentiment, did he?
But where is the 100% save file?
That's what Jack asked for.
I couldn't transfer my
Xbox data. For the 100%.
I could not transfer my Xbox data, so I will have
he's
to
a fake
do a
fan.
Fresh playthrough.
Yeah.
Bro, I've been stuck. Yeah, I was stuck in Final Fantasy Rebirth for 52 hours over 2 weeks. I am surprised I am like cognizant at this point.
All right. Here it is. Wheel
see
of questions.
Ooh, there's a sound effect now.
It was there
better
before.
I couldn't hear before. I don't. I couldn't. I also have been.
Was it not?
We're gonna say it's new.
Yeah. What is the most expensive thing you've ever splurged on? Ooh, we made.
I can
have you ever splurged on anything?
I don't.
He's like a Game Pass subription.
Yeah, so splurged is like something you don't need, right? Like, because obviously, you know, if we're buying like furniture or something like that, I mean, it's kind of a gray area, I guess. But
okay, great question. So we'll define splurged as either unnecessary or above what you need, because you could get furniture, for example, but you can get kind of furniture you really don't. You don't need.
Yeah. It's expensive.
Heat warming, butt massaging furniture, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Like, a smart water bottle, yeah.
You can get
not
a water bottle, but you don't need a smart water bottle.
That
yes,
is a
so
splurge.
That's how we'll define splurged.
Right.
David, I feel like this should be like an automatic answer for you. I feel like you stay splurging on stuff.
What's funny is you say that, but actually knows I'm always looking for a deal, so I never splurge on something. I always find it cheaper. Like
you might splurge, you still paid $5
still
less
paid
than
a
what
fraction
everybody
of
else.
What everyone else does. Like that's the thing is I'm very calculated. So my wife actually gets mad at me because I don't splurge. I'm very calculated when I spend money.
If I need a deal,
no. I actually have an answer.
You
I actually
can get
have
something
an answer.
On sale
and
still
this
splurge.
is actually embarrassing, and something that even Noah does not know. Like because it's something that just came to mind. Ooh,
grand reveal on the podcast.
Yeah.
So this
hold up. Go ahead.
Go back to. What? I was gonna say. Make sure you go back to the. Get rid of the middle thing on the screen. So so that way we're all clearer here. So when I was trying to remember, it was early 20s.
You get the maybe, whole screen.
Oh, no. I want to see everybody's reaction. That's the thing. I can't see everybody's reaction. So I saw like this. I was out driving and I saw a number for this dating thing. And I was very like, I wanted to know what the deal with it was. So I ended up calling. I set up an appointment. I went to this office and it was one of those like pay for it. And they do like the matchmaking and all that kind of stuff or whatever. Like, and I guess it was like a lot more of an intense formula kind of thing or whatnot. I dropped a grand.
You dropped a grand on a dating.
It was like
is that at least how you met your
wife? It wasn't a site. That was before things like Tinder and whatnot were like a big deal and stuff. It was like this guy who was like this, like he actually did had like an actual like matchmaking service kind of thing. Like it was a professional like kind of style thing.
That is an interesting thing to split.
Like I actually had like an interview and stuff and. I just decide. I honestly was trying to go pay to win. I'm actually like so upset at my younger self because I should never have spent that kind of money. Like I said, early 20s. So I mean, this was like probably 21. It was 21 or 22. One of the two.
So it didn't pay off.
No, it did not in the slightest. And in fact, I actually, funny enough,
if you said that's how I met my wife.
Here's the best part of the story, actually. So I do all of this. There were 5 to 6 actual like setups that were supposed to happen through all of it. And he included I could essentially put a pause on it if I wanted to continue with somebody specifically where you wouldn't just send me the next person. I put a pause on it after like 2. So yeah, I did not get my money's worth in the slightest.
So you left money on the table.
A lot of money on the table because some of it was not wanting to deal with it.
Was it a grift?
In the end. No, I don't believe so at all. He was a real deal. This was an actual, like I actually set up at one of the dates. Went out and so I mean it wasn't just one person that had went and paid for this. So I just want to point out
just for, you know, David's married now, he doesn't have to worry about it, but like in the future there are other places in, you know, our country where you can spend $1,000 and do a lot more than what David did. Just saying,
if you're going to splurge for inflation and all that,
results.
Yeah, that is actually one of the things I regret splurging on ever. Like, I don't know if I just was like, I guess I was just in a point where I was just like, you know what, why not? Because I was a single dude who was an assistant manager at GameStop and lived at home, so I had a lot of disposable income at that point.
Yeah.
Because I didn't pay much rent at all to my parents. They were pretty okay with me spending pretty low amount. So cost me, you know, a couple video games at the most. So
just a couple, yeah.
But it still to this day upsets me because I'm not that kind of, again, no one knows I am not that kind of person. Like I
only took one lesson.
Yeah, I'm very much a save my money, don't splurge on things kind of person.
Yeah, so that's
wasn't even a good splurge. Date or anything. It was just kind of bad all around.
Yeah, the guy who had everything set up was really nice and everything like that. But beyond that,
they always are.
I don't know what it was about the entire situation. I just decided I was tired of it pretty much, I guess.
You didn't see yourself hit the question mark block, Noah?
No.
Oh, okay.
I kept looking up and it wasn't there.
Yeah, I don't have anything that matches something. That's.
I told you it was a good story.
That's two in a row. You got us with the smart water bottle and now splurging on dating.
Yeah, we can just end it here.
You need to go back and look at that segment. It's time stamped, okay? Just go on YouTube and watch it.
It's pretty great.
I'll take a break from playing Rebirth at some point. So
can just take it's a break like, from what, the podcast. 10 minutes? Watch it right now.
yeah, we'll just put it on for you, I guess. So it, splurge. Yeah, I don't splurge much either. I don't have the opportunity to splurge. My wife is very good with the money, but usually, you know, spending that much money, it's calculated. Going on a cruise, going on a trip, vacation, you know, whatever. But one year, my wife and I think, was it before COVID or after COVID? I don't remember. I think it was, maybe it was after COVID. No, it was before. It's 2019. Yep. And we decided to go to Magic Mountain. So Six Flags Magic Mountain, it's a theme park out here in California. Usually holds a record of some kind for some roller coaster in the world. So we go there. It's fun. It's fantastic. After we were done, we got an email from them talking about, you know, go buy a season pass. And we were like, should we do that? Should we buy a season pass to Six Flags Magic Mountain? And it's like, I mean, it's, I think it was like $120 for both of us. So for us, that's like a lot of money for something as frivolous as Six Flags Magic Mountain. So it's like, but we did the math and we're like, if we go two times, it kind of pays for itself. Two times.
That's how they get you. That's how they get you.
Kind of an hour and a half. Six Flags. Yeah, go twice. We get a cup. Yeah. Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. We did it. And we went three times that year. But, you know, like, it was just like, we actually did that. We just bought some season passes to Six Flags. Absolutely 100% don't need to do that. But
oh, sounds like you got your money's worth at least.
We did get our money's worth. We did. We did. We had some great times. But yeah. We kind of wanted to do it again in 2023. But we're trying to have a second child. So, you know, it's like, well, chances of getting pregnant, we won't be able to go on a roller coaster. So we're going to have to hold that off.
That can go for after they're a little older.
Yeah. I can't wait till my daughter can go to Six Flags. Oh my gosh. It's going to be so much fun. Do you have any splurging, Jack?
You know, I was thinking about it. I mean, I can justify a lot of the dumb stuff I buy, so I wouldn't count a lot of it as splurging.
That's fair.
I mean, I think probably the example that immediately came to my mind when you said that splurge is the Steam Deck I bought. Because I don't need the Steam Deck. I mean, and it's expensive. I forget how expensive it was.
Was it impulse too? Was it kind of an impulse buy?
It was impulse too. And it was like,
oh yeah, yeah.
But and I mean, I think overall it's paid off where I use it a lot and it's been helpful. Like, I think the last five or six games I did for a review for various places were on the Steam Deck. So, I mean, I use it. And so that's,
yeah,
it's good. But, I mean, it is. It was a lot of money to spend at one time. And I kind of can't, even in retrospect, I can't believe I did that. Because that was the OLED one. And they just like, oh, yeah, we're doing it. I'm like, you know what? Maybe I should just do it because it'd be a convenient way to play PC stuff. And technically, I wouldn't consider this a job that I do, but like it would be helpful for what I do for this. So, <Yeah. laughs> and so I spent the $600, $700, whatever that was. And that was a lot of money. So
that is a lot of money to just throw down. Yeah. Impulsively.
Yeah.
Noah.
I've been thinking of like what's singular. And I actually went and grabbed it. Probably the like singular item that I splurged on, just for the collector in me that I probably shouldn't have, was I got it's a limited edition for the Mugen Train movie from Demon Slayer.
Oh.
I don't know if you could. I think this was like $100, $120 because I got it imported from Japan.
Oh.
So it's. It's weird because it's like they'll sell it, the English version, you know, distribute it to the U.S. But there are the limited edition versions from Japan that they had English and just full, you know, Japanese. So I imported that. It probably shouldn't have, because it was after like shipping and stuff, it was around 120. But overall, the biggest thing I probably splurged on is my manga collection. I think I'm up to like 160 or 180 volumes.
Oh my God. What? Yeah. So that's just an ongoing splurge.
That's the, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It's a live service splurge. Myself. Yeah.
Goodness gracious. 180 volumes. You're the real deal.
Yeah. I'm what they call a weeb. Which is ironic because I read my manga digitally. I buy the paperback to collect.
Okay.
Yeah, I understand that because I actually have thought of buying a physical copy of Final Fantasy. I'm like, I've already got the game though. Like, but it would look nice on a shelf.
Yeah.
Well, I love reading manga and comics and physical. Like, that's usually the way I do it. I mean, there's weekly stuff like I'll keep up with. Well, I'll read it digital, but overall, I want the physical stuff. So,
I can't stand it because when I do like the spine and stuff, like it gets wrinkled and stuff. I'm like, no, I want it pristine. Like my manga has not been opened; they all just sat, you know, together. So, it's also easier just to read on my phone at work. That's all I do now. It's just read while I'm at work.
No, yeah, that's true. If there is something to collect besides shoes, probably manga.
I guess the other thing that I splurged on when the wife and I went to Disney after all the COVID stuff, like we ended up building lightsabers in the Star Wars area, and I bought another lightsaber, bought all kinds of like stuff there. We probably spent about $1,000. Just on merchandise.
Seems to be a connection with your splurging. It's $1,000 or probably more.
Well, admit it. The only thing I will say is it was completely planned, and
that's technically
delayed,
part of a date too. So that's kind of the same.
because it got delayed, it was actually part of like my birthday was where we were going, because it was the first time we were going to get to go to the Star Wars area, and we delayed it. It got delayed a year because of COVID. And it was actually good in a sense it got delayed, because we were able to save up more money to spend.
So this is the connection with David and splurging. It's $1,000 and it has to do with a woman.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Women are the best. I did splurge to get a Nintendo, my Switch OLED. That was an unnecessary purchase for sure. I was saving up for a PlayStation
5. Not after
5,
you look at that screen, man. Not after
that
you look
screen,
at that screen.
Man, it sold me. I was like, this was worth it. I didn't
ain't,
even know.
Ain't
it was
no way be... that's unnecessary.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It felt, I was just like, well, my Switch was getting old. So I was just like, I bought it within the first year. So my original, I was like, Joy-Cons are kind of going out a little bit. Screen's old.
That was why I bought my OLED, because my Joy-Cons were going out, like, and I looked up the cost to like buy new ones. I'm like, man, I might as well just get a new Switch.
Yeah, really. You're not joking.
Yeah. It's like, might as well look into it. I guess I'll put the PlayStation 5 on hold and just get a Switch OLED. Just do that. All right. That'll do it for us. I want to give an applause to Noah because his sound is working today. There were no technical difficulties.
Oh, I thought you were going to say because I showed up.
No, your sound showed up.
And you hit the mystery block too.
Yes, I did. Yes, you did. We'll see if the news cycle slows down again. Yep. We're supposed to talk video games.
Meaty topics. That's been the reason. I mean, we literally spent half an hour on one and half an hour on the other.
I know. I'll take it, though. I'll take it. Yep. Keep bringing us content, video game industry. That's what we're here for. All right. Appreciate you watching. Appreciate you listening. We'll talk to you later. Deuces.
Peace. Everybody enjoy Rebirth.
I'm planning on it.
I don't have a PlayStation 4.
That's for sure. Oh.